It's hard to believe, 10 years. Seems a world ago, a nation ago, and yesterday, all at the same time. It was a primal event, which is why we keep commemorating it and trying to draw lessons, in my view, often the wrong lessons from it. It was a primal, iconic event, not because of the amount of death, but the concentration of death and the pictures, the images, those iconic images of those planes going into the towers when we saw death live on television. It made it hard to have plausible deniability, though many of us, myself included, tried. When I saw the second plane go into the second tower, I was in denial. I knew what it meant immediately, of course. We were under attack from someone, something. We were at war. But there was part of me that said, I've seen this movie before. I've seen Los Angeles destroyed 100 times. I've seen Washington destroyed 100 times. I've seen Tokyo trampled on by Godzilla. And I wanted to make it a movie. I didn't want it to be real. And I still don't want it to be real. But it is a primal event, an event of scream, of horror, of tears, and the question becomes, will it become someday an event of real learning and growth and understanding? When I was wrestling with how to put this together, the Greek philosopher Thales came to mind. Thales was one of the, in some ways, the first scientists and first philosophers who tried to do philosophy not rationalized through the conventional religion, but actually as an exercise in thought and reason and observation. He's also a cautionary tale because he got a lot of it wrong. But the process was right. He looked at the world, at all creation, as if it were made up of four elements: earth, air, fire, and water. And I think that's either one or four of the reasons why 9/11 is so primal. It's earth, air, fire, and water. It's the flames in those towers sending up ashes and human beings, melting steel, sending up all of this into the air that then falls back down, raining debris, particles, dust, and death. It was a terrible constellation of elemental forces. It was, in many ways, as Americans, and certainly within my lifetime, our darkest hour. But it was also, during that day, our finest hour. We behave, for the most part, the way that we should as human beings. We embraced each other. In the towers themselves, people helped people down the stairs, regardless of race, of religion, of ethnicity. Everybody was two things in those towers. Everybody was American, whether they were American or not, and everybody was gray, whatever their birth color, because they were covered with the ashes. There was one humanity in those moments, and America and humanity worked the way that it should. And of course, we all know that the moment passed, as these moments do, as these epiphanies do, and we lashed out in reasonable fear and sometimes unreasonable actions and unreasonable ignorance. Our view of Muslims pre-9/11 was pretty much ignorance. Nobody, even in most of our counterterrorism units, knew Al-Qaeda from Wahhabi, from Sunni, from Sufi, from Shia, from Ishmaelite, from any of the various branches. We have replaced ignorance with some information, But also, we have replaced ignorance, which is the absence of knowledge, with some misinformation also. So that there are an awful lot of Americans who understand less about Islam today than they did in 9/11. For the most part, Americans acted decently on 9/11 and in the weeks that followed. For the most part, there were terrible and tragic exceptions where perceived Muslims, perceived Arabs were beaten and in a couple of cases shot. Those were tragedies. But the American people, we the people, for the most part, acted well. The same cannot be said of government. We went to wars. We went to war. We lashed out. We were shocked, and it was shocking. We were hurt, and it was hurtful, and we wanted to punch somebody. And so we did. The question, of course, is whether we made our world safer or less safe, and that's something that people are going to debate. But at the moment, the American people do not believe that Afghanistan and Iraq has done very much other than spend blood, theirs and ours, treasure, theirs and ours, and get a bunch of people who didn't know who we were not to like us very much because we have killed and are being killed by their families. When we look at this, the way that it was pitched in some ways as a religious war, as a cultural war, I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding. It's grabbing part of a picture, but not the picture. We seldom look at World War II as a war against all those Germans were evil, and that means that mostly Protestant Germany, we were fighting a war against German Protestantism. We're fighting a war against Nazis. The IRA, mostly Irish and mostly Catholic, but nobody really thinks that there's a worldwide struggle between the values of the West and Ireland and Roman Catholicism. And yet most Americans believe that this struggle, and it is a struggle with Al-Qaeda, with a tiny, numerically insignificant branch of Islam and a distortion of Islam, that represents Islam in a much greater way than the IRA represents Roman Catholicism or Nazis, and their twisted cross represents Christianity. It's true that most of the terror attacks that have come to the Western world have been perpetrated by members of Al-Qaeda, which is a sub-political sect of a religious sect, but to call it Islam, or to call it even fundamentalist Islam, there are lots of fundamentalists. I studied Islam with a fundamentalist. He was a fundamentalist in the best sense. He grasped onto the fundamentals. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. That's the fundamental part. The hate part is something that we human beings find a way of adding to any doctrine, no matter how sweet, no matter how pure. Christians can do it. Jews can do it. Followers of Nietzsche's path, nothing personal, followers of Nietzsche's path can do it. If you actually read Nietzsche, he's not the monster that the fascists turned him into. You can take any doctrine and make it hateful. So I think that we, 10 years down the line, have not well understood or responded to what happened at 9/11, to our pain, to our tears, to our rage. Our leaders had a job of protecting us, and I understand their instincts. If I had John Ashcroft's job on 9/12, I would have wanted to arrest everybody also. I'm sorry, you're looking a little tan today, Danzig. You're going to jail. You certainly said something subversive. I better question you for a long time. It wasn't Ashcroft's impulse. It was the people, the grown-ups, who were not the checks and balances against the fear, against the hurt, against the impulse to strike out in rage against someone. 9/11 changed our lives, our society, our laws, our sense of ourselves. We today endure indignities that we never would have imagined 10, 12 years ago. We get examinations at airports that our HMOs would likely not authorize. We are asked to do all kinds of things in the names of safety and security, to take away people's rights. While the American people, for the most part, acted decently after 9/11, our government put people in jail on suspicion of being Muslim. They put them in jail and kept them there without judge or writing, without due process. They opened jails, they opened prisons, they opened camps all around the world in their understandable fear. The fear is understandable. I understand how on 9/11 and 9/12 and 9/13, everybody was waiting for the other shoe to drop, the other bomb to go off. I understand that. But there is no perfect security anywhere. When we look at triage, when we look at the actuarial tables, outside of the theaters of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, outside of the theaters of war in Yemen, in North Africa, in Israel, in the West Bank, in Gaza, when you look at Muslim terrorist actions across the world, it is under 400 people worldwide killed. Now, that's a tragedy. 400 people is not acceptable. But what do we give up in our fear? What do we give up, acquiesce to, in fear of even complaining about it? When you look at 40,000 Americans every year killed by gun violence at home, but talk about gun violence and you're going to be driven out of the meeting. Talk about Muslim violence and you'll get applause. 40,000 Americans killed every year on the road. Talk about new standards for cars and safety standards and seat belts, and nobody wants to listen to you because it's a job killer. But talk about Muslims, and again, you'll get applause. It is not that the dangers aren't real. The dangers are absolutely real. But our response is not proportionate or rational. 10 years later, are we safer? Well, we know that there have been plots against the United States. We know that many of them have been stopped. We know that extremist terrorism has taken place in Africa, in Spain, in London. We know all of those things are real. The FBI pointed out 2 weeks ago what I've been teaching in a terrorism class that I teach at the university. It's not a how-to class. I'm against it. It's understanding terrorism and asymmetrical warfare. Civil aviation, private aviation, is a great threat. We're very vulnerable. In Southern California, in Los Angeles and Orange County, we've built iconic structures. We've built iconic structures, and you don't need to hijack a 747 and crash it into the Rose Bowl or into Disneyland or into the L.A. Coliseum when there are games going on. You can get an airplane, an executive jet out of Van Nuys, a Cessna out of Whiteman in Pacoima, out of Fullerton, and go to Disneyland, go to the Coliseum, go to the Rose Bowl. And nothing short of stationing people on every large structure with surface-to-air missiles will give you any kind of protection from those kinds of acts of violence. All of that is true. Is that what we want to do? Is that how we want to live? I submit to you that we are not particularly safer, and most of what we have done and most of what we have given up has not made us safer. The least safe thing we can do is to make enemies all over the world by killing people with drones and killing people and hating people and fearing people instead of trying to build bridges of understanding and understanding that IRA does not equal Ireland and Roman Catholicism. Al-Qaeda does not equal Arab and Muslim. These are aberrations. They are real and they are dangerous. And I would look for wisdom, for learning, to England. One, England, they can't assure perfect security and they're much smaller than we are. And they have cameras on every corner. They survived Hitler's Blitz with their chins up and their upper lips stiff. They survived IRA bombings that even killed members of the royal house, and they didn't go crazy and throw out all of their laws, their protections, and their safeguards. They didn't huddle in fear. I'm not sure that fear is the only thing we have to fear, but fear is something pretty big, and America is disproportionately afraid of the world, and it also means we're disproportionately afraid of each other. That's a toxic situation. We have to learn to balance the threats that are real, but numerically insignificant. We need to look at the iconic events and feel their impact. I feel the impact. I lost a cousin in the towers. It was not nothing. The impact of an iconic event, of the picture of those planes that stays with us, as we were discussing earlier, Doris and I were. Why is it so iconic? Well, it's very specific in time. Aristotle talks about tragedy taking place within the constraints of time. The concentration of time and of death makes it iconic. The personalization of seeing people and their tears and the pictures that they hold up of people who were missing makes it personal. If you talk about the Holocaust, the Shoah, and 6 million, nobody can respond to that. I can't. If you talk about Anne Frank, it's personalized. There's a specificity to it. We look at 9/11 and we get the impact. But the lessons of 9/11 are to be aware, but not afraid all of the time. Frightened people do not make good decisions about themselves or their government. They react. They run away. They push away. They want to get rid of the thing that makes them afraid. And if you are constantly afraid, you will start to hate the thing that you fear. And once you start hating the thing or the religion or the person whom you fear, that person is going to respond the same way. We're in a negative spiral, a negative reinforcing spiral. Proportionality is the lesson of 9/11. It is, we do mourn our deaths. That terrible day when earth and air and fire were joined in a cauldron, a boiling cauldron of hate, was a real event. The ashes that fell on us, that our tears turned into a kind of cake and carapace. 10 years later, it's time to wash it off. It's time for our salty tears to mingle with the salty ocean, the one water that we can use and have used to separate ourselves between two shining seas, or understand that we are joined to a world, a whole world, a world of different people, different tribes, different politics, different religions, and that people of different nationalities are not all one thing. Americans are not all one thing. Democrats are not all one thing. Republicans are not all one thing. Muslims are not all one thing. Or Jews, or Israelis, or Egyptians. We are complex individuals joined with the same needs on the same planet in this same time. And if we are motivated by fear of difference, instead of truly understanding that we do not have to think alike to love alike. We do not have to speak alike to love alike. We do not have to worship alike to love alike. It doesn't mean we deny bad things. It doesn't mean that we can't mourn. It doesn't mean that we don't get angry. It means that we step back just a little to try to understand what it means, what we can do, how we can be and live our highest values. We will never live them perfectly, but it is something noble to try to reach beyond ourselves, beyond our fear, and understand the beauty and the complexity of what makes us different and what makes us one humanity, sharing one ocean, one water, and one planet.